Today is Tuesday, April 7th. This is VOA's International Edition. I'm Lori London in Washington. British Prime Minister Boris Johnson has taken a turn for the worse in his battle with the coronavirus.
The Prime Minister's condition worsened, and on the advice of the medical team, he was moved in to a critical care unit.
The World Health Organization urges caution in relaxing lockdown strategies. Also ahead, music stars from across the globe are set to stage a live fundraising concert in the fight against COVID-19. It's all on today's International Edition. British Prime Minister Boris Johnson has been moved to the intensive care unit of a London hospital after his coronavirus symptoms worsened. Johnson was admitted to St. Thomas's Hospital late Sunday, 10 days after he was diagnosed with COVID-19. Johnson has asked Foreign Secretary Dominic Raab to deputize for him.
The Prime Minister's condition worsened, and on the advice of the medical team, he was moved in to a critical care unit. So in light of those circumstances, the Prime Minister asked me as First Secretary to deputise for him where necessary in driving forward the government's plans to defeat coronavirus.
For more on Johnson's condition now, we are joined by reporter Amy Gutman in London. Amy, what can you tell us?
There's been no announcement of a change in the Prime Minister's medical condition or medical state. The notion is that he has been admitted to the ICU, the intensive care unit, as a precautionary measure. We know for certain that he's not on a ventilator at this stage and that he is conscious because this evening, after he was admitted to hospital, he called the foreign minister, Dominic Raab, to hand over day-to-day prime ministerial operations, not powers, to Dominic Raab. So he wouldn't be able to do that if he wasn't conscious, and he certainly wouldn't be able to do that if he was on a ventilator. So it's believed that this is a precautionary measure.
It does seem like it would be serious if he went in and, given the circumstances, to be using an ICU bed if it wasn't somewhat concerning.
There's no question that Boris Johnson being admitted to hospital first and then to the ICU is absolutely serious. There's no question about that at all. And there's no question that Boris Johnson taking the measure of calling his foreign minister, Dominic Raab, to hand over day-to-day operational duties is also a significant step change in what we've seen so far. Because remember, the prime minister has had this diagnosis of the coronavirus for the last 10 days. Now, he's been self-isolating, and his condition was not getting better. In fact, we saw pictures of him in an interview late last week that was recorded from his home, and he was not looking good. He was looking very pale, very pallid. He had lost a lot of weight. A lot of people get better at the 7-day point, and he seemed to be getting worse, which can also happen. So it's been 10 days now. So the prevailing notion is that he was admitted to hospital again as a precautionary measure because he should really be getting better at this stage. And if he's not, there is great concern based on what doctors know about other people who have suffered from this virus that perhaps he will take a more rapid turn. But again, this is just speculation. Being admitted to ICU, there may be concern that the next step could be that his condition could worsen, necessitating the use of a ventilator. But again, it's important to note he has transferred the carrying out of his duties.
Can you explain the difference of handing over day-to-day operations versus power? And what if he does take a turn for the worse and is not able to be in control of the government? Then who takes over? What's the chain of command there?
The chain of command is that the foreign minister, Dominic Raab, who he called to transfer the carrying out of day-to-day operations, would take over in that prime ministerial operational role. Now, the difference between the duties versus the powers is exactly that. So carrying out the duties means that Dominic Raab has to continue consulting with Boris Johnson about decisions. So operational decisions, as well as any serious critical decisions that would be made by the prime minister, have to be run past the prime minister. That's Boris Johnson. So this doesn't empower the foreign minister to all of a sudden replace Boris Johnson or be a surrogate for Boris Johnson. This simply means that he will carry out and execute Boris Johnson's duties and his wishes, and again, will consult with Boris Johnson on any critical decisions that need to be made. Now, if Boris Johnson were to take a more serious turn here and be in a much more grave condition, then yes, the foreign minister would need to be empowered to carry out prime ministerial powers, and then he would essentially be a surrogate for Boris Johnson, and he would be able to make those decisions, as in that circumstance, Boris Johnson would be incapacitated.
That's reporter Amy Gutman in London. Thank you. Well, Britons are bracing for one of their darkest weeks in living memory as the social and financial toll of the coronavirus pandemic deepens. But Italy, Spain, and France are now seeing signs that they are flattening the pandemic curve. This as European nations and the European Union begin working on a plan to open back up and deal with the enormous economic impacts when it's all over. Joining us now from France is Paris-based journalist Catherine Field.
It's really the member states who are dealing with this. And we're seeing various countries dealing with or trying to deal with some sort of structure that would bring their population out of lockdown. So, for example, Austria, the Austrian chancellor has come out and said that the aim is by April 14th, there will be strict security conditions. There will still be social distancing, but very much relying on the population controlling themselves, not deciding that come April 14th, they can go and party. In Germany, pretty much the same message again there too. Chancellor Angela Merkel said on Monday that she can envisage a time when people will be able to get back to some sort of life, normal life again, but that there may be obligations, and we're seeing there as well, and perhaps an obligation to wear masks in public, still limits on public gatherings. And those are the sort of decisions that European countries are starting to have to deal with. And another issue they're having to deal with is that the cases are really very much in a lot of the metropolitan areas. For example, in France, there's a lot in the Paris area, but in the outlying districts and regions, there are much fewer cases. So we're also looking at the possibility of some parts of, say, for example, France and Germany really going back to something like a normal life, while you're getting these big metropolitan areas are still going to be under some sort of lockdown. Certainly the next question is going to be, though, how are you going to deal with citizens' movements?
Right.
Well, one of the ideas being put around is that people's telephones, people's mobile phones will have tracking apps. And those apps will trace citizens' movements, ensure they're not breaking curfew rules, and make sure that they're staying away from infected people. So that in particular is again going to come up to some very interesting questions on how much information the government will have in these countries about where each person is going, and just how much of a track these apps will have on citizens' movements.
Right. And of course, we know in Europe, movement from country to country, not just from one city or part of France as well.
The EU is trying to figure out some sort of way that you can get citizens' movements going again, but not you're losing so much of the battle that's been won thus far with the health of its people. So this is a big problem, a particularly big problem at the moment, because you've got in the agriculture sector where there's meant to be people working on these big farms. That's not happening. So the EU is trying to, on the one hand, figure out how people will be able to move again, and that will include lifting some of the border restrictions that we've seen come in place over the last month, and also questioning whether people are going to exactly the right places, so as we don't end up with too many people in one area and then having an outbreak there and not enough people in another area. It's a very complicated picture, and I think we're going to see by about the end of this week, after a whole range of European Union meetings, we're going to start seeing a clearer picture of how Europe is going to deal with what's become known as a sort of a post-lockdown world, which will happen very gradually.
what is the EU planning to help with economic recovery?
The economic recovery is the big issue for small European and large European states. And when you look at most of them are now looking at the possibility of the worst post-war economic downturns that are going to be way beyond what anyone imagined, certainly well beyond 3-4% contraction of the economy. So looking around at what the European Commission is doing, they're looking at giving direct grants to companies. Those could be up to 800,000 euros for each company. They're going to be subsidizing state guarantees on bank loans. You're going to have small and medium-sized businesses being given subsidized interest rates. And the sort of money we're talking about is really almost unknown in Europe. You're talking about 37 billion euros being put aside by the European Union to go to help small businesses. You've got another 28 billion being put aside to help businesses restructure.
Paris-based journalist Catherine Field, thanks so much for being with us. In the U.S., President Donald Trump said in an afternoon briefing Monday that Americans should be prepared for a difficult few weeks.
The progress has been made before the surge comes, because the next week, week and a half, is going to be a big surge, the professionals tell us, and I think we're in good shape for it.
He also said he received a call from former Vice President Joe Biden, the Democratic presidential frontrunner, who offered his advice from the past administration's experiences.
He gave me his point of view, and I fully understood that. And we just had a very friendly conversation. Lasted probably 15 minutes. And it was really good. It was really good. Really nice. I think it was very much so. I appreciate his calling.
Meanwhile, New York City remains the epicenter of the pandemic in the U.S. New York Governor Andrew Cuomo suggested the crisis may be plateauing.
Total number of hospitalizations are down. The ICU admissions are down, and the daily intubations are down. Those are all good signs, and again, would suggest a possible flattening of the curve.
But he also warned against complacency and extended stay-at-home restrictions and the continued closure of schools and non-essential businesses through the end of the month. He stressed that even if New York has reached peak, numbers could persist, and this will help the state avoid a worst-case catastrophe.
The numbers look like they may be turning. Yay, it's over. No, it's not. And other places have made that mistake. Hong Kong has made that mistake. South Korea has made that mistake. And we're not going to make that mistake.
While hospitalizations are down, the number of coronavirus cases in the state increased by 7%. The World Health Organization's emergencies chief said countries looking to exit their lockdown strategies need to use a calibrated, stepwise approach that does not release all of the restrictions at once. Here are some of the other top pandemic stories we are following from around the world. The organization that handles claims on behalf of Jewish victims of Nazis announced Monday that millions of dollars in additional funds are being made available to agencies around the world that provide aid to Holocaust survivors whose advanced age and health issues make them particularly vulnerable to the new coronavirus. The World Health Organization Monday denounced racist remarks by two French scientists for suggesting coronavirus vaccine testing should be carried out in Africa. Tedros Adhanom Ghebreyesus, an Ethiopian who is the first WHO director general from Africa, decried what he described as a hangover from a colonial mentality at a time when he is urging solidarity among countries. And J.K. Rowling, the author of the Harry Potter books, says she has now fully recovered from what she believes to have been coronavirus. Rowling said in a tweet that she has not been tested, but that she had displayed all symptoms of the virus over the past 2 weeks. Stay with VOA for all the latest on the coronavirus pandemic. Kenya's president on Monday ordered a halt to all transport in major cities, including the capital, Nairobi, to curb the spread of the coronavirus. The president announced the measures after 16 more people were confirmed to test positive, bringing the total number of COVID-19 cases in Kenya to 158. Rael Ambor reports from Nairobi.
In a televised address to the nation, Kenya's President Uhuru Kenyatta announced one of the stiffest measures yet for the containment of the coronavirus.
To contain and limit the spread of the disease to other parts of the country, the National Security Council has sanctioned and caused the issuance of the following additional measures. Number one, that there shall be cessation of all movement by road, rail, or air in and out of A, the Nairobi metropolitan area, and B, the counties of Kilifi, Kwale, and Mombasa. Number two, the cessation of movement within the Nairobi metropolitan area shall be for an initial containment period of 21 days.
The restrictions in Nairobi County go into effect at 7 p.m. Monday night and take effect in other three counties at 7 p.m. on Wednesday. All of the 158 cases detected in Kenya come from those four counties, with a large majority being found in Nairobi County. Six Kenyans have died from the highly contagious virus. Kenyatta said the restrictions are regrettable but necessary.
I issue these enhanced measures well aware that they will complicate and inconvenience many Kenyans. However, by not doing so, this can only lead to even greater suffering for the people of Kenya.
According to the president's directive, no passengers carrying vehicles, trains, scooters, motorcycles, or aircraft will be allowed movement within the four counties. Kenyatta said transport of food and other critical cargo would continue without any disruptions, he said. A nationwide 7 p.m. to 5 a.m. curfew that the government introduced last week remains in effect. Worldwide, there are now more than 1 million confirmed cases of coronavirus and more than 50,000 deaths. Raya Lumbur for VOA News, Nairobi.
The Afghan Taliban say their peace deal with the U.S. is nearing a breaking point, accusing Washington of violations that included drone attacks on civilians. AP correspondent Charles de Ledesma reports.
A statement says the Taliban had restricted attacks against Afghan security forces to rural outposts, had not attacked international forces, and had not attacked Afghan forces in cities or military installations, adding these limits on their attacks had not been specifically laid out in the agreement with the US signed in February. The group also chastised the Afghan government for delaying the release of 5,000 Taliban prisoners promised in the agreement. The Taliban statement, issued Sunday, warned of more violence if the US and the Afghan government continue alleged violations of the deal. I'm Charles de Ledesma.
Advocacy groups say Lebanon has put into place restrictions that discriminate against Syrian refugees as it battles the coronavirus. Human rights groups say the restrictions do not apply to Lebanese citizens and could both undermine the country's public health response and endanger the refugees' health. Dale Gavlak reports for VOA from Amman.
Lebanon is under a daily 7 p.m. to 5 a.m. curfew to fight the spread of the coronavirus. The infection has sickened 541 people to date and left nearly 20 others dead there, according to the latest figures from the health ministry. The government is allowing residents to take trips outside the home, but only for medical emergencies, food, and medicine. Human Rights Watch says even before the nationwide curfew was announced, a number of municipalities implemented what it calls discriminatory restrictions on refugees. Nadia Harman, an HRW refugee rights researcher, says these limits include extra curfews.
You have these additional restrictions on Syrian refugees, only allowing movement between 9 a.m. and 1 p.m. In informal tented settlements, only one person, possibly two, have to be appointed to go out and get supplies for the rest of the informal tented settlement. In other places, this must be done in coordination with the municipality. In other instances, fine, also confiscation of ID.
So far, no coronavirus cases have been formally registered among the refugee population. But the refugees themselves are raising concerns about their ability to access health care. The refugees also say they lack information on how to protect themselves against infection. Hardman argues that limiting the spread and impact of the coronavirus in Lebanon requires ensuring that everyone can access testing and treatment centers.
What is needed right now is equal access to the national health system. There is a hotline call, and the Ministry of Public Health will direct you to a testing center, but we have concerns accessing that center might not be free. There needs to be an upscale initiative to promise that there will be no consequence for seeking medical help. Because as soon as you start treating this population differently, which is anxiety and fear and is underlined by xenophobia, how are you going to encourage people to go and get tested?
Lebanon hosts the largest number of refugees per capita in the world. One in four people there is a refugee, according to the United Nations. Many of the Syrian refugees live in sprawling and squalid informal tent camps that resemble shanty towns, particularly in the Bekaa Valley. About 40% of the estimated 1.5 million Syrians in Lebanon are not registered with the United Nations, and so are not eligible for cash assistance or food parcels. Until recently, many could not receive medical care. The UN Refugee Agency says it will cover most, if not all, medical costs for refugees with the coronavirus, and have begun an awareness campaign. Still, advocates say that the tens of thousands of unregistered Syrian refugees could remain vulnerable. Dale Gavlak for VOA News, Amman.
You're listening to International Edition. We'll be right back.
What's going on, Africa? This is Jackson Vunganyi coming to you from the Voice of America studios here in Washington, D.C. Join us each week on Upfront as we discuss a range of topics. The show tries to capture that fundamentally aspirational nature of today's African youth. As you've noticed, right here on the show, we talk about everything. Nothing is off the table.
Eliminate the mentality that girls cannot do what boys can do.
You basically need to go to school. There's just no way you're going to get all these skills that people want from you or they expect from you if you're not at school.
I am a social networker, often online. For me, it's all about making connections, meeting people.
Can AU, African Union, can these people really solve this nonsense of rigging election, brutality during what election violence, all this whatever?
Remember to connect with us on Facebook and on Twitter at Upfront Africa.
Border Crossings.
Join host Larry London.
Larry London.
On Border Crossings, VOA's only worldwide music request hour.
Whoa.
Every weekday at 1500 Universal. Tune in for the biggest hits and amazing artists. Win prizes and get the latest news from exclusive celebrity interviews.
Ooh.
Send your requests to Facebook at VOA Larry London, Twitter at Border Crossings, or Instagram at Border Crossings VOA. Or call 202-619-2077 and have your favorite music played to the entire world.
Ah.
Don't miss Border Crossings every weekday at 1500 Universal, only on The Voice of America.
The World Health Organization reports a special concert, One World Together at Home, will be broadcast virtually around the world on April 18th to drum up support for action to stop the spread of the COVID-19 pandemic. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from Geneva.
The driving force behind this initiative is superstar Lady Gaga, who has been working with the World Health Organization and Global Citizen, a movement that works to end extreme poverty. This concert will bring together some of the world's foremost entertainers, including Chris Martin, Billie Eilish, John Legend, Elton John, and Stevie Wonder. Co-founder and CEO of Global Citizen, Hugh Evans, says the event will celebrate the bravery and commitment of the frontline health workers who are risking their lives for others.
Through One World Together at Home on April 18, we'll be calling on philanthropists, corporations, and governments to fund critical global COVID-19 response efforts, including distribution of resources and PPE to critical frontline healthcare workers.
WHO Chief Tedros Adhanom Ghebreyesus understands the critical role played by healthcare workers in the struggle to defeat COVID-19. He expresses concern that some countries are considering the use of both medical and non-medical masks in the general population to stop the coronavirus from spreading. He says medical masks must be prioritized for health workers on the front line of the response.
We're concerned that the mass use of medical masks by the general population could exacerbate the shortage of these specialized masks for the people who need them most. In some places, these shortages are putting health workers in real danger.
Tedros says masks must be used as part of a comprehensive package of interventions. He says masks alone cannot stop the pandemic. There is no silver bullet. To bring the pandemic to an end, he says countries must continue to find, test, isolate, and treat every case and trace every contact. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
Tell me something, boy. Aren't you tired trying to fill that void? Or do you need more?
As Lisa mentioned in her report, a host of international stars will perform in a live concert April 18th to raise funds for the fight against COVID-19. Lady Gaga announced she'll be performing in the concert, calling the coronavirus pandemic a catastrophe and saying she is praying for all those who are sick. Other musicians expected to perform include Chris Martin, Alanis Morissette, John Legend, Billie Eilish, Elton John, Andrea Bocelli, and many, many more.
And all
You've been listening to International Edition. That does it for our show today, but you can always find us at voanews.com. On behalf of our producer, Jackson Wenganye, I'm Lori London in Washington. Thanks so much for listening. Please take care of yourselves and be well.
Me loves all you, love your curves and all your edges, all your...
This is VOA News via remote.